Parshas B'Shalach. B'nai Yisrael, after leaving Egypt, were being pursued by the Egyptians. They came to Yam Suf, and they were trapped. The Yam was in front of them. The Egyptians were coming up from behind. So Moshe Rabbeinu davens to Hashem that they should be helped. And Hashem makes a comment which needs explanation. Hashem said the following words to Moshe Rabbeinu: Mati tzak elai, daber al b'nei Yisrael v'yiso. Why are you screaming at me, Moshe Rabbeinu? Speak to b'nei Yisrael that they should go. So the obvious question is, what do you mean, why are you screaming to me? What else is a Yid supposed to do? That's what a Jew is supposed to do when a Jew is in time of trouble. And we are told by Chazal to daven. That's it, right? Problems come, daven to Hashem, then He should help you. So what kind of a time is Hashem after Moshe? Hey, what are you doing? Why are you davening to me? Just go. What do you mean, why are you davening? You're supposed to daven. So some say, the Q-Vort, that Moshe Rabbeinu still had a few steps to go to the Yam. He wasn't exactly in the Yam. He had a few steps still. So Hashem was saying, Moshe Rabbeinu, what do you say? Of course you have to daven to me, but only when you've done all you could. And you still have three or four steps until you go to go. After your three or four steps, then you can daven to me. Not yet. However, saw a nice pshat by Shlomo Yisachar Teichtel, Hashem Yimkom Domo, in the Sefer Im Habanim Smecha. He brings down Rashi and asks another question. Rashi says, on this, Mati tzak elai, you know, why are you screaming to me, Moshe? Speak to me, Israel. So Rashi says, Ein lam el lisa. Hashem is telling Moshe, all they have to do is go. She'ena yam od made lifneim. It's as if the sea is not in front of them. Kedai schus avoseim. Why? Because it's worthwhile. The schus, the merit of their fathers and themselves, and the emunah sheheminu bi v'yetsu, and the emunah that they had when they left Egypt to split the yam, the kro lahem hayam. So the main question here he asks is, since they had this tremendous emunah, which Hashem said is enough to split the yam, so lama lo to, why shouldn't it help the tefillah Moshe Rabbeinu alone? With the schus of the emunah, without going, they need to travel. They had a tremendous emunah, so why couldn't Moshe just daven? And with the emunah, that should split the yam. Why did they have to actually go? Why did they have to move? So, he brings down that we see here a big yesod. And that is that emunah without maisa doesn't work. Now, it's not enough to be a good Jew in the heart, and that's it. Emunah is not enough in the heart. It has to be brought out. The person has to go and do a maisa to show his emunah. That's what real emunah is. In other words, the person can talk and say, yeah, I believe in this, I believe. It's easy to talk, it's easy to say, I believe. But you have to show your emunah. It's a cute joke that they say, that brings this out, actually, that there was once a apikoros, a person who denied, an atheist, and once he was taking a hike, and he fell off a mountain. Went too far to the edge, and he fell off the mountain. He's plummeting down to his death, and as the saying goes, there's no atheist in a foxhole. Well, there's no atheist in falling down a cliff either. And he turns to the heavens, and he said, if there's a God up there, you know, let him save me. So all of a sudden, out of nowhere, this huge branch comes flying out of the side of the mountain, and he grabs hold of it, and he's saved. So he's like, wow, right, thank you so much for saving my life, he says to God. And but then he's a little bit perplexed, because here he's hanging there, you know, in the middle of nowhere, with the abyss below, and hanging on this branch, and he says to God, God, now what? So God answered him, now, let go of the branch. In other words, God wanted to test him. Right? He said, you have emunah? You say you have emunah. Okay, now let's see really how much emunah you have in me. Let go of the branch. Right? So that's called showing your emunah before, actually. And so therefore, so too, when Klal Yisrael, when they left Mitzrayim, they left Al Kanfei Nisharim, they didn't have to show their emunah. Hashem took them out. Right? Took them out of Egypt, brought the Eser Malkos. Right? They were just watching. They were just spectators. Okay, they had emunah from everything they saw, but they didn't ever have to show their emunah. This was the first time that Hashem brought them to Yam Suf, had them stand there with the sea in front of them, Egyptians pursuing from behind, and now they had to show their emunah. They had to, like this guy, to let go of the branch. They had to jump in the water and show that they're going to trust Hashem that He's going to somehow save them, even though they're going into the water. And that's called showing your emunah. And that's what Hashem was telling Moshe. Mati tzakelai, what are you yelling at me? Dabero b'nei Yisrael v'yisao. Speak to b'nei Yisrael, let them actually go in. They have to show their emunah. They have to travel. They have to go into the water. They have to let go of the branch. They have to show their emunah. It's not enough what they say. And that's why, as we said, it wasn't enough for Moshe just to daven. We asked, why couldn't Moshe daven? And I don't know, that's enough with their emunah, because that's not the point. They were brought to the Yam to show their emunah in actuality, to walk into the water with the trust that Hashem is going to do miracles. So a similar Hasidus Shemaisa, there was once a woman, that she was childless, and for years she went to the Rebbe and cried, says, Rebbe, I'm childless, can you do something, whatever. So the Rebbe said, okay. Says, I'll give you a bracha that you should have a child. Give her a nice bracha. She says, oh, thank you, Rebbe. As soon as she heard that, she went to the store, and the store where they sell things for babies, children, and she bought a carriage, and every night she would take the carriage and push the carriage around the block. Push the carriage around the block. Empty carriage. Right? And hope that one day this carriage will be full. And sure enough, within a year, she had a baby boy, and she had something to push around in this carriage. So the bracha of the Rebbe was miskayim. She came to one of the Hasidim came to the Rebbe. He says, Rebbe, I don't understand. Rebbe, you've been giving me brachas for a child also, and never worked. Why? Why this woman, you gave her one bracha, and boom, it worked. With me, it never worked. So the Rebbe said one thing to ask the Hasid one question. He says, tell me, have you been pushing a carriage around? So he says, that's the difference. Meaning, there's enough belief showing. Yeah, I believe. Yeah, the Rebbe said it's going to have a... But there's a difference showing your emunah. If she pushed a carriage to show that I believe, look, she went out and purchased a carriage and pulled it around, show I believe, to show her emunah. Not enough just what you believe in your heart. You have to show it. There's a beautiful story which also, we see this idea of showing one's emunah. There was a family that came from Europe in the turn of the century, and last century that is, and as we know, many stories that in America, it was very, very hard to be religious. Specifically, Shabbos was a problem, because places were open on Shabbos, so a day off was Sunday. And many, 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 many stories of Yidden that they had to work. They worked 6 days, and when they told the boss, "I'm not coming in on the next day on Saturday," the boss said, "Thank you, but goodbye, and if I could find another place of employment." And he would go from place to place. So there was one such family. They had a number of kids, and the father, a very handy guy, but couldn't hold down a job because every week came on to Friday, loses a job next. So the problem, main problem was they had to rent the place. They're renting an apartment, and he couldn't pay the rent because he kept losing his job. So the owner of their apartment, gave him warning, you have to pay the thing, we're going to kick you out. He couldn't pay. So it was the middle of the winter one year. The owner comes to them, he says, get out of this apartment, I warned you, goodbye. And he kicks him out of the apartment, and here he has his family, mishpacha, wife and kids, and they're out on the street, literally in the middle of the winter. And nowhere to go. So across the road, there's a building, and there was a shomer guard of the building that was sitting outside. And he saw his family sitting there out in the street in the middle of the winter. So they approached him. He approached him and says, well, what's going on? What are you doing? So he said, well, we told him we got kicked out of our place, and we know where to go. So he felt really bad, and he says, listen, in the building over here, there's a furnace room. Okay, in those days, they used to heat up buildings with coals and the furnace, whatever. And there's a furnace room. It's not the greatest conditions in the world, but at least you'll come out of the cold, and it's definitely warm in there. And I'm sure you can stay in there until you find yourself some accommodations. So he wasn't crazy about the idea, but it's better than being outside in the freezing cold. So the whole family moved into this furnace room. And you can imagine, there was no proper facilities, and it was just a room full of coals and a furnace. And besides that, you know, kids will be kids. They're jumping around, playing around in the coals. They're always filthy black from all the coals. So one day, these kids were playing around outside on the road, and they were like black as ever, you know, filthy. And this man just walks by, and he sees a very, very strange sight. What is it? He sees these black children speaking Yiddish. And he says, "That's strange. I never know black kids. They don't usually speak Yiddish." So he comes up to one who's curious. He starts talking. He says, "Oh, what?" So he realized what happened. They're not black. They were just dirty. And he said, "Why are you so dirty?" "Well, we live in a furnace room." "We live in a furnace room? What's going on over here?" So he said, "Take me to your parents." And he brought him into the building, in the furnace room. And the father was there. He says, "You live here?" He says, "Yeah, why would you live in a furnace room? How can you do this?" So he says, well, he told him, he realized that this man was a Jewish man. So he says, "Well, you know, we have Shabbos, we keep Shabbos. I can't hold down a job because every Friday I lose my job, whatever." Anyway, this man felt terrible for this family. He opened his wallet and he took out $500. Now, $500 in those days was enough to support a family for a whole year. He took out $500, he handed it to the man, and he said, "Here, take it. I can't bear seeing you like this." So he thanked him profusely, for the money. He said, "Wow, you know, thank you so much." He said, "No problem, you know, it's my pleasure. I really want to help you." In the middle of their discussion, the mother walks in. So she says, "Who is this?" Whatever. So the father says, "Oh, this man was so generous. He gave us $500. And so the woman looked at the man and says, "You're Jewish, no?" And he says, "Yeah." So he says, she said to him, "Tell me something." She says, "Are you Shomer Shabbos? Do you keep Shabbos?" So the man said, "No, I don't keep Shabbos." She says, "You don't keep Shabbos?" She grabs the $500 from her husband, puts it back in the man's hand, and says, "We don't want the money." He says, "What do you mean? Why not?" He says, "We're Moser Nefesh for Shabbos. And, you know, what we did, we lost our apartment, we're in this furnace room. Why? Because we want to keep Shabbos. We're Moser Nefesh for Shabbos, and here you are, how can we possibly take money from a person who's Mechal of Shabbos?" He said, "No, thank you, we appreciate your generosity, but take your money and go." So he says, "No, please, take it." No, she would hear nothing of it. He says, "No." Sent him home with the money. Unbelievable. The end of the story goes, he came home and told that he was so taken aback by what had happened. He told his wife the story, and his wife said, "Yeah, if that's the case," she says, "I want you to promise me right now that we're going to start keeping Shabbos. And if you won't keep Shabbos, I'm going to divorce you." I can think of such an extreme. He says, "What do you mean?" So she said, "If you remember, we used to also keep Shabbos one day. Till you said, you know, work, this, maybe one Shabbos I'll be mechallel, you know, because I have to do this thing, whatever. And you did that once and did it again. And before you know it, that's it, no more Shabbos." She said, "I felt terrible. I didn't ever want to, you know, go against you and fight. But now I see that you have this sensitivity because of the mice that you saw. So that's it. I'm standing on my own. If you don't, you know, keep Shabbos, I'm not going to stay with you anymore." And the end of the story goes, they kept Shabbos, and both families, both the family that were in the furnace room and this rich man, both eventually had children that became big Talmidei Chachamim and Klal Yisrael. Anyways, here's a woman that Rama showed her belief. "Oh, no, yeah, I believe, yeah, Hashem takes care of us, and someone who keeps Shabbos, Hashem watches over." You know, it's very nice to say, it's when it's easy to say. But to take this money, which they so dearly needed, took the money, gave it back, and take your $500. Can you imagine what a nisayon that was? But that's showing your emunah, not just believing it, it's showing it. There's a similar story with the Ludomir Mishpacha. Mishpacha is a family famous for their srogim here in Eretz Yisrael. A very wealthy family. And the father of this family, he was in Tzfas many years ago, and he had a little business going. Anyways, he would buy and sell things, But he had a minhag that every day he would stay in the base medrash in the morning, and he wouldn't, he had his kvias, we call it. He would sit and learn and teach in the morning for 2-3 hours, and then he would only in the afternoon, he would go to his store. Anyways, the story goes that he made once a very poor purchase. He bought a whole huge stock. He invested all his money in this gold thread. Somebody was selling at a decent price, so he invested all his money in this gold thread. And at the time, things took a turn for the worse, and people couldn't afford bread and milk, let alone buy gold thread. So it was stuck with the merchandise, and couldn't turn it over, and it was a big loss for him. Anyways, what can you do? But he kept on with his kvias every day, learning. One day, this Arab merchant comes to his house. And he was in the base manager at the time, and says his wife, "I heard your husband has a tremendous stock of gold thread. I'd like to buy it all, and I'll pay cash for it. I really need it for it." So she goes, "Oh," she couldn't believe it. What a, you know, see, after the Shemaya, what a break. She says, "Okay, it's no problem. So my husband will be home in an hour, and he'll you know, make the sale." And he goes, "Oh, no. You don't understand. There's no hour. I have to leave. I have to leave in a few minutes. My caravan is leaving and back to my country, and I have to leave. If he comes right now, next couple of minutes, fine. But otherwise, I'm sorry." She goes, "Oh no!" So she sends somebody to call her husband from the base medrash. He doesn't come. So she goes, "Oh, okay, just give me 5 minutes. I'll run and get him myself." So she runs to the base medrash. She calls her. Just quick come. Goes, "What's wrong?" So he tells her quickly the story with the gold. So we can part with this gold thread finally. So he says, "No." He says, Kvias, I'm not leaving the base medrash. Tell him if he wants to come back in an hour or whatever when I'm finished, no problem. I'll be more than happy, of course, to sell him the gold thread. But if not, not." So she says, "No, what do you mean? I mean, you know how long we've been waiting to part with this?" And he goes, "I'm sorry." So she goes, "Wait a minute. Okay, I'll make you a deal. You're worried you're going to miss out this hour of learning, right?" He says, "I'll tell you what. If you come home now, miss out this hour, I promise you for the next month, how about 2 months? You don't have to show up in the store at all. I'll take care of the store morning and afternoon. So you lose an hour here, you gain 2 months of afternoons as well. You can learn all that much more Torah. Okay, you'll come?" He goes, "No, I'm not leaving. An hour is an hour. I'll come after my kvias, I'm sorry." He goes back into the basement. So she comes home, tells the Arab, "You won't come another hour if you're willing to wait." He goes, "No, I told you I can't wait." And he says, "Goodbye." And that was the end of that. The end of the story is, Rav Ludomir comes home, and a couple of minutes later, there's a knock on the door. Who was it? The Arab. He says, "You know, my caravan got stalled, and they weren't leaving for another few hours, so I'm here, and I'm willing to make the deal if you're willing." And he sold all the gold thread, and they got all the money. But they, as a side, they asked Rav Ludomir, "Lachlora, what your wife had said to you in the, you know, she came to the business, she had a good time. I mean, she said she was going to steal an hour from you now, but you give much more in return, so why didn't you accept that when she said that?" So he said, "Why? Because yes, I know the Yetzer Hara. That's the way the Yetzer Hara works, right? I don't break my kvias for anything. If I would have broken it for an hour, what would happen? Then something else comes up another day, and then I don't want to break my kvias." And then the Yetzer Hara says, "Look, you already broke it once, so if you break it once, why'd you guys break it again? You did it already once. And then I break it again, and then I break thing, and then before you know it, goodbye, Seder Limud. There goes my learning schedule." So that's the way the Yetzer Hara works. As soon as he gets his foot in, it's true that per se that would have been true if that was the only damage I would have caused. That 1 hour I get it back in 2 months. However, that's the Yetzer Hara. He gets his foot in, one thing leads to another, and that's the end of everything. Once again, we see from Ludmir here the showing the Amunah, right? Not just believing, yeah, Hashem takes care, you just have to keep learning. He turned down this tremendous deal, which he thought he was going to lose, but he saw the importance of this Torah, keeping Torah schedules, and again, trusting in Hashem, but showing his emunah by we're willing to forego this deal. I'd like to perhaps suggest another answer to this question that we asked, why, you know, what should do wrong? If it's davening to Hashem, what is Hashem telling him? Tabir ben Yisrael v'iso, you should go. The person has to be very, very careful how he speaks. We see a few short examples from Gedolim of the past. first one was as a maisa of unidentified. There was once a gadol that he was at some simcha, and he was served for dessert kompot. He made a mistake, and he made the bracha when he shouldn't have, or whatever. From that day on, he was mekabel on himself not to eat kompot anymore. So he explained why. What happened was after he made the mistake and somebody said, hey, why did you make a bracha or whatever? So he didn't want to cause like a chil Hashem. Say, well, I don't know, I made a mistake, right? In his stature, it wouldn't have been so fitting. So he said, you know, I usually don't eat kompot. I don't eat kompot. So then, you know, when I got mixed up because the first time I ate kompot. So that the truth is, he does eat kompot, but he said that to save face. So, but since that day, he was mekabel on himself not to eat kompot ever again. Since those words left his mouth, and he says, I don't eat kompot, so he made sure that he wouldn't eat kompot anymore, so that those words that he said shouldn't turn out to be a lie. You see, a similar maisa like this with Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky Zatzal. He was with his Talmidim, they were in shul, and they saw an elderly man, about an 80-year-old man, and he was putting on, after davening, Rabbeinu Tam tefillin. They said to the Rebbe, they asked Rav Yaakov, how come you don't put on Rabbeinu Tam tefillin? So, jokingly, he said to the Talmidim, when I get to be 80 years old like this man, I'll also put on Rabbeinu Tam tefillin. Like jokingly. However, since those words left his mouth, it was brought down that when he turned 80 years old, his 80th birthday, he started putting on Rabbeinu Tam tefillin. Since, okay, he meant it as jokingly, when I get to be an album also, but it was a joke, but he realized that, joke or no joke, when words leave your person's lips, you have to be very careful and to mekayim them. Similarly, there's another story of Rav Yaakov. Once he was visiting, he was a young avreich at the time, or it could have been maybe he was a bachur, and he was visiting somebody for Pesach, this family. And in those days, you didn't go home for Pesach, you know, to your family. It was very expensive. So he stayed in the area of the yeshiva. And he was eating by this mishpacha. But the mishpacha he was set up, he was not so sure about the kashrus. But he didn't want to, he was uncomfortable, you know, not to eat things, you know, telling him, you know, because the kashrus was very uncomfortable. So he had an idea when the woman of the house brought the dishes. He said, you know, I feel terrible. I really appreciate, you know, the food and everything, but Lemaisa, he says, I don't eat gebrucht. And I don't eat, you know, matzah mixed with water. So I'm sure, sorry, I can't eat it. Which he really did eat gebrucht, but again, he didn't want to make the woman feel bad or embarrassed or whatever, so he says, I don't eat gebrucht. So once again, it's brought down that from that day on, the rest of his life, Rav Yaakov never ate gebrucht. Since he said those words, left his lips, that I don't eat gebrucht. Which was, again, it was only to say because he didn't want to embarrass the woman, but since he said that, he had to mekayim what he said, and never again did he ever eat gebrucht on Pesach. Furthermore, we see a story from Elchanan Wasserman, Shem Yimkom Domo. Once, and he was from a town called Brunovich, once he asked a fellow in the town, he says, you know, I need this certain chesed done, and he approached this man and said, I wonder if you can take care of this project for me. He says, Rabbi, I'd love to, but I have no strength. I'm weak. I can't. I'm weak. So Rabbi said, okay, you're weak. And that was that. He approached somebody else. A while later, he bumped into the same fellow, and the fellow looked terrible. He looked like weak, and he looked like sickly, and he said, oh, Rabbi, please, you have to help me. I need a bracha. Why is Hashem doing this to me? I feel terrible. I have no strength for anything. So Rav Elchanan said, you did this to yourself. Right? If you remember a while back when I asked you to do this project, what did you say? I have no koach. Well, you had plenty of koach. But you said, I have no koach. So Hashem has to be Mekayim what you said. Right? You said you have no koach. Hashem said, fine, you don't have koach. I'll make you have no koach. So to step beyond what we said before, a person has to, what he says, he has to be Mekayim, but if a person doesn't do what he says, then Hashem sees to it that Hashem does what he said. We say it's like a self-fulfilling prophecy. A person comments on and says, oh, I can't do this, I can't do that. When he really could, Hashem says, oh yeah, you can't, and I'll make you really can't do that. So a person has to be very careful what he says. And the truth is, on the flip side is also true, though, right? If a person speaks positively and says, yes, I can, even when it's not so easy, and he's like, Ben Israel said at the Har Sinai, Nasa Benishma, they didn't know what they're getting themselves into, but they said, we're going to do. We don't know what, but we'll do it. We're confident. So too, if a person is confident and says he can do and he will be strong as a Bozer Hashem, then even if it's questionable whether he could do it, but since he has a positive attitude and he has emunah, the Kadosh Baruch Hu is going to give him the strength to be able to do it. So I was thinking, perhaps, therefore, we could say that maybe that's what Hashem was telling Moshe Rabbeinu over here. Right? They were davening to Hashem and acting like we say in Hebrew, miskenim. Like these people, poor people, like, oh, what can we do? We're stuck. Oh, the yum. Oh, they're talking we're weak. We can't. So Hashem was trying to teach us lessons. No, Moshe Rabbeinu, what are you crying to me like poor, weak people? No, you have to act strong. Have strength. Like we said, Nasa v'nishma, we're going to do. We're going to conquer. And then go. Daber ben Yisrael v'yisau. Don't tell them to. They have to go, not to tell me that, oh, we're so weak or whatever. When you're not so weak, because then, like you said, it'll be a self fulfilling prophecy. You will be weak. That's not the approach. The Barabbas Yisrael be so. Go for it. Show, like we said, show your emunah and be strong. And then, if you the Barabbas Yisrael speak on speak properly, speak with strength that we're going to do. The Barabbas Yisrael be so. Speak to them that we're going to go. Then Hashem will give you the strength to be able to go. So that's perhaps another lesson that Hashem was teaching. So therefore, just to summarize, we mentioned before, it's two ideas. One idea that a person has to, not enough to have a moon in the heart, to be a Jew in the heart, a person has to show his moon. And we've brought a number of maisim, which with people that did this, and in fact, showed their moon, didn't leave it in their heart. And that's one idea. And the second idea that we saw is that a person has to be very careful what he says and realize that certain things he can say, if he says and say them properly and doesn't have the proper attitude, then his negative thoughts he has on himself can be self-fulfilling prophecies. And therefore, we have to speak positively and have confidence. And it's a sham if we do so. We take our emunah, we show our emunah, we are careful what we say, we think positively, we act positively, we speak positively. Kadosh Baruch Hu should accept all our efforts and crown them with the tremendous zchios and the ikar zchios of becoming Mashiach Tzidkenu b'mehirah b'yameinu.